And that's how it feels when you're in stage one, and sometimes even stage two. It's like relationships are hard, yes. But when you've done the work, which again, we've been together 7 years, and I would say pretty much all 7 years was working on this, you can get to that, like, wow, this relationship feels like a fucking dream. Welcome back to the Magic of Transformation podcast. I am your host, Stephanie Zeller. I'm very excited to share with you part one of a three-part series about relationships. The reason why I wanted to do a series of podcast episodes on this is because this has been my greatest area of personal transformation and growth and development, as well as research and experimentation for the last 5 years. So I have a lot to share with you because I myself have done so much work in this area. And something that I love to do on this podcast and in all of my courses is share with people the solutions that have worked for me and give people information that might be otherwise difficult to access. So what you're going to hear in this three-part series is how to completely overhaul and transform and up-level your relationship. Now, if you are single, I would still highly recommend that you listen to this series, and especially if you are in a relationship. Throughout these three parts, I do refer more frequently to like a hetero relationship, like male-female. However, these principles apply to queer relationships as well. So it certainly doesn't need to be hetero. It's just the way that I was speaking about a lot of these concepts. Now, this episode in particular is critical because I go through the three stages of a relationship, of a conscious evolved relationship, and I just cannot wait for you to hear this. So a couple things I want you to keep in mind as you're listening to this episode. One, the goal of this three-part series is to give you hope, and even if you love your relationship, to give you a way to conceptualize it being even better. Because I've worked with a lot of clients who feel like they're happy in their relationship, but then once they do this work around the relationship that I introduce them to, it gets so much better, gets so much juicier and better than they could have possibly dreamed or imagined. And that's what I'm all about, right? Not just in relationships, but in life. I'm here to show you that a life is available to you beyond your wildest dreams. You can manifest beyond your wildest dreams. You can have a career beyond your wildest dreams, and you can have a relationship beyond your wildest dreams. And that is what this three-part series is all about. Today, I am joined by my soul sister and sister-in-law, Morgan Zeller. She's been on the past few episodes with me, and she will be here with me for this three-part series. Be sure to check out the show notes below. I have some additional episodes that you can listen to if you like this one, and make sure you are subscribed or following the show so that you don't miss part two and three. And as you're listening to this, if you have somebody you want to share this revelation with, like, whoa, I had no idea relationships could get so amazing, share this episode, whether it be with your friend, your colleague, your sister, your brother, your mom, your dad, your partner. Please share this episode with anyone that you think could benefit and be inspired by it. And last but not least, I have life-changing courses. So if you are ready to go all in on your personal transformation journey and, like I said, live a life beyond your wildest dreams, feel really good every single day, manifest, have a career beyond your wildest dreams, check out all of my courses at thetransformationschool.com. Oh, and don't forget to give me a 5 stars if you like this series. I so appreciate you taking 2 seconds to do that. Thank you so much. Without further ado, enjoy this episode. I guess I do want to say before we start for the listener that we're going to be diving into some relationship issues. And the impetus for this conversation was based on a conversation that we started having the other day. And we can cut this if you want, but I think that it would be really helpful for the listener to know your experience with it. So like we kind of touched on it and then we were like, wait, let's save this for a recording and do some podcasting on it. But then you texted me in the interim and you were like, I have a tendency when it comes to my relationship to get really defensive and be a little bit triggered. And I responded to you that whenever we have a defensive energy come up, I always think of the phrase like thou doth protest too much. And it's like when we have a need to defend, there's something in us that is unresolved and not fully, like resolved or integrated in terms of where we're at. So there's a part of us that is questioning. And sometimes it's so scary to have our relationships examined or to worry that maybe something is off, and it feels like very unnerving to us. And so we can quickly want to defend so that we don't have to examine anything. But you know that you really are resolved when there's really no need to defend whatsoever, when you can listen to somebody else and feel total peace and you feel very, very secure where you're at, versus like if you start noticing in your head that you're like, well, you know, she doesn't know X, or, well, that's not right for me. And like that voice of kind of defending, and we all do this in so many areas of our life, but in general, like if something is coming up in you ever, not just in this conversation when you're listening, but if something is coming up in you where you feel like you're needing to defend, that's always just like a beautiful moment to pause and be like, hold on, wait, what's going on in me? Why do I feel frantic right now? Why do I feel a little anxious? Why do I feel a little angry? Why do I feel a little irritable? Like, what am I trying to defend? And then just doing some self-exploration around that.
That's beautiful. Yes, to all of that. So when we were speaking the other day, we were talking about relationships. And I guess the first thing that really comes up when I sit and think of my relationship with my husband, my questions really revolve around, where is the line between accepting who someone is and not trying to change them, and letting someone get away with things?
So I think first and foremost, a relationship is always a mirror. So there's always utility to asking, like, if you're triggered in an interaction with your partner, to first, you know, as long as the situation is like, you know, you're physically safe and everything.
Right. Yes, of course.
You want to ask yourself, like, okay, why am I triggered here? What's going on? What's being triggered in me? And understand the origins of your own trigger. We think whenever we're triggered in relationship that, especially when we're in the trigger, that it's because someone else has done something wrong and that's all there is to it. And like sometimes, yes, people can be better. People are doing things that are unkind or that are harmful to someone else. But also, if we're responding in a triggered way, then that means there's something that's unhealed or unresolved in us. So the work is mutual in both being able to have conversations about, hey, what you did, I feel like wasn't in like highest and best for both of us. And there's work I am doing right now to evaluate why I was so deeply triggered in that situation. For example, let's say that I tell my partner, we're going to have dinner at this time. And let's say he's always late. Every single time is late. And I get really triggered by that, like again and again and again. And then I could go into this questioning of like, well, maybe that's just who he is. Like maybe he's just late everywhere he goes. And maybe I just need to deal with that. I don't want to have to change him. Maybe that's not even loving for me to want to change him. But at the same time, it's like really hurting me. So this is where a conversation can come in. And this is like what I do with my partners. Well, first of all, the first thing I'll do is evaluate using a tool like Trigger Free, which is a method that I use to deconstruct and unwind my triggers so that I can respond in situations in a non-reactive way. So I can respond in a peaceful way. So the first thing I would do in that situation is if he keeps showing up late, I would do Trigger Free to understand what is this triggering? Because it's not just that he's late. It's also probably triggering the fact that I feel like maybe I'm not being listened to. And then that's reminding me of when I wasn't being listened to as a child. And it's bringing up feelings of he's not valuing me same way I felt when I was a child when so-and-so didn't value me. So our relationships are this beautiful mirror. And I mean, that's really what they are ultimately, is they're catalysts for our healing because they always trigger unhealed places in us. The people that we have most intimate relationships with are the ones that often will trigger our most unhealed places. And then we always have a choice. We can either look at those unhealed places. We can work them out with like a trauma-informed therapist or with like trigger-free, or we could completely ignore that and act like everything that's happening is just what's happening in the moment. and then like blame our partner or freak out, or the inverse of that, which would be to totally suppress it and not say anything, and then essentially just become more and more resentful inside and start distrusting
Blow
your partner
up.
more and more and more. Yeah, until all of a sudden, like you have a moment where you kind of blow up and your partner's like, whoa, what is even going on right now?
Right.
And in you, there's like 100 things going on because you haven't said anything the last 100 times you were upset. So like what I do with my partner, if he does something that triggers me, is I will first work out the trigger on my own. So I use my tool Trigger Free, and I will, using that method and that tool, I will deconstruct.
Which, by the way, I just have to say is amazing.
Yeah, I just gave you access to that.
Amazing.
And you just used it for the first time today, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So I will use that to the point that I can then be in a place where I feel resolved. I feel like I understand what was really being triggered in me. I am no longer triggered. And I think this is a hard thing for people to even conceptualize, but I will use that method and that tool until I don't feel triggered about it at all. So I can just literally sit here and be like, yeah, he's late. Every day he's late and I'm at peace. Like, that's where I want to get to. Once I'm at that point, I'll sit down with him and I'll have a conversation and I'll say, hey, I'm noticing that you're always late. Now, there's a huge difference between me saying that in a non-reactive, peaceful place than if I would have said it without doing trigger-free and being really triggered and being like, you're always late. And, or even if I try to say it calmly and I'm like, you're always late, like people can feel our energy. So immediately they're going to get defensive. Your partner's going to get defensive. If you are feeling any degree of intense emotion, even if you're trying to hide it and you're trying to be calm, they can still feel that. They're going to get defensive. Versus if I go in and I'm like, hey, I noticed you're always late and I'm calm. That's a totally different energy. Like they feel safe suddenly. And then what I would say is, this would really mean a lot to me if you could show up on time. Is this something you're willing to do? And I would just, I mean, this is the exact technique I've used many times in my relationship. Genuinely, I want to know, is this something you're willing to do? Because if it's not, I need to decide if that's okay with me and I need to change my expectations. Like maybe we stop eating dinner together or something, but I need to like adjust my expectations. Because the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting different results. So it's like, if I keep expecting you to show up on time and you keep not, then ultimately that's my problem because now I'm insane, right? So maybe he says, yes, I'm really going to try. Then I'm going to say, okay, then I'm going to really actually expect you to try, right? Like if you're saying this is something you want to do, then I'm going to expect you to do that. So how can we make this a priority? Then it would be his job to figure out, okay, how can he change his schedule to show up? Now, there's also situations where, let's take an even bigger example of, let's say that I'm in a relationship and my partner works and so do I. And I've decided through the course of my relationship that it feels best when I pay for half of rent and my partner pays for half of rent. And for whatever reason, inside of me, it doesn't feel right for me to cover all of rent. So much so that that becomes a non-negotiable for me. So in that case where something is a non-negotiable, is I'm going to sit down with my partner. I'm going to say like, hey, I want you to pay half of rent. This is actually a non-negotiable for me, meaning like either you do this or you have to move out.
Yeah.
Right. And there's so many examples of that. Let's say like you're pregnant and you want to go to the doctor and it's like, you want your partner to come. This is a non-negotiable for me. I want you to come to the doctor with me. So understanding what are your non-negotiables? What is so important to you that you would actually be willing to walk away from the relationship if your partner didn't show up for you in that way? That's a non-negotiable. And then being really articulate about those things and being, I would say, fair with those things too. Right. And you have to actually
follow through.
Yes. You have to actually believe and know that it really is a non-negotiable. I'm not talking about just like threatening here. I'm just saying,
yeah, yeah.
Really doing the work to understand what is so important to me that I need a partner that does it. And if my current partner will not, then I'm willing to go find a partner that will, or I'd rather be alone. That's kind of the non-negotiable stuff. And then being able to clearly say that. So for some reason, if my partner showing up to dinner on time was a non-negotiable, then I would sit down and say, hey, okay, I've really done a lot of personal work on this. Again, I'm really calm because I've done trigger free. And so then I'm going to say, this is really feeling like a non-negotiable for me. This is so important to me. So like, can you do this? You know, and you know, for really big things, this has come up in my relationship several times over the last 7 years. You know, things obviously much, much bigger than showing up late or something, but things have come up in my relationship that have led me to essentially say, hey, this is something that I need. Are you willing to do it? If you're not, I love you so much, but I can't continue in this relationship if you're not. And just being like, again, I'm not triggered. I actually am at peace. And he feels that. And usually, when a partner will feel that you are more at peace, they will respond in a totally different way and they'll kind of want to show up. Like the big problem, especially with hetero relationships, like male female dynamics, and I'm generalizing and I'm kind of creating some archetypes here just for the sake of the conversation. But a lot of times, what happens is that the men are not super present and they're not following through with the things they say they're going to do. And then the women start feeling angry. And so then they start getting in this spiral of either they start telling them again and again and again, like you need to do this. And then they start feeling like they're nitpicking their husbands. And the husbands feel like the wives are nitpicking them. And they're like, I don't want to be married to my mom. And the wife is like, I don't want to be your mother. But what are we supposed to do here? Like, how are we supposed to do this? Like, when I'm asking you to do something, you're not following through. So I either have to swallow it and feel really angry inside, or I have to tell you about it, but then I feel like I'm nagging you and it like totally kills any type of intimacy or connection. So like, what do we do? And there's this like double bind. And so what I find a lot of people doing, and this can go both ways too. Like sometimes in a relationship, it's the female that, you know, or the other partner that's not present and not following through. And then, so it can happen either way. But what ends up happening a lot of times is it's such a headache that people end up starting to suppress everything and not saying anything and just like swallowing it. And then there's like a rift that grows in the relationship, and there's not as much intimacy in terms of just like connecting in someone's presence or flirting or sexual intimacy, but there's less intimacy in general because now essentially like one person is not trusting of the other person. Usually it's the female, I don't actually trust you because you're not following through on all of these things that you've said. So it's a process to unwind that. And I think the first most important thing is to just like recognize the pattern that's going on. And a lot of that comes back to your question of, okay, where's the line? When do I say something? What is just them? When am I actually being nitpicky? So first, I think that this always starts as an inside job. It's really taking the time to, again, I'm probably going to say trigger free a million times in this episode because I just think it's the perfect tool for this. And I just told you the other day, it completely saved my relationship with my partner. He and I would use trigger free every day to try and figure out exactly that line of what is my baggage and what's the extra charge I'm bringing into this relationship versus like what is just the problem in the relationship? Because what you don't want to do is bring all of your baggage and then blame your partner for essentially all of these unresolved, unhealed wounds from your past and from your childhood and from your relationship with your caretakers. Because we tend to pick partners that have a lot of similarities to at least one of our caretakers. And we do that unconsciously to heal unresolved wounds. So we don't want to like project onto husband what dad was doing to us. That's unfair to the relationship. It puts way too much strain on the relationship. And that's why it's so important for both partners to start doing their own inner work so that you can decrease some of the charge and understand that, okay, whoa, this is a journey that we're both on. We're both healing unresolved wounds. How can we do that in a way that's like sacred to both of us and honors both of us, where we're not lashing out at each other because I was abandoned when I was younger? You know what I'm saying? And so, in order to do that, I think it's really helpful for each person to have their own therapist, to have your own tools like trigger free, so that you can do that work. that's what I would say is stage one. Let's say stage one of a relationship is where you are really unconscious. So this is like two people that have not done any inner work, that have not done any evaluation of their childhood. They get super triggered in their relationship dynamics and they don't do any self-evaluation of why they might be triggered. They're always just blaming their partner for why they're triggered. That's like a stage one, totally unconscious relationship. To shift from stage one to stage two, you want to start taking personal responsibility, self-responsibility, and being like, okay, I am triggered right now. But there's probably something else going on in me that's being triggered because my partner showing up 5 minutes late shouldn't make me this angry. So what can I do to try and deconstruct and heal whatever is triggered in me? And then how can I also address what's happening in the relationship? Because both need to happen.
Yes.
But if you don't do that first part of the self-evaluation, self-responsibility, then that's when relationships can get super toxic because you're both blaming each other for so much stuff that really is not one another's fault, right? Because it's just a bunch of unhealed stuff in you. So if you can do the both and if you start taking self-responsibility and then you bring forward things that are points of contention in the relationship. And this is stage two. This is where you really have to learn dialogue techniques. This is where like imago dialogue or nonviolent communication dialogue come in. There's a book by Marshall Rosenberg called Nonviolent Communication. The one that I would recommend over that is Getting the Love You Want by Harville Hendrix. And at the end of that, they have imago dialogue. So like really learning to have loving, thoughtful conversations with your partner, holding space for one another to express. But I really believe you should do work before that. You should do some personal processing work before showing up with your partner to have that conversation. Otherwise, again, you're bringing in a bunch of baggage into that conversation. Like you can have the most useful, helpful dialogue structure in the world. But if you're still bringing in all mommy daddy issues or caretaker issues or childhood issues into that conversation, it adds so much additional strain on the relationship that is, I think, unfair to the relationship.
Of course. And that person might not know any of the things that are swirling through your head.
Oh, you never do. We never know what's unresolved. I mean, usually, unless you really start to...
Unless you really, really know the person, but,
right.
And, or it's a big T trauma, you
right.
know?
Right, right.
But
yeah, like 99% of the time, we don't know why our partner is triggered. For instance, my partner and I have been so good at deconstructing our triggers for the past several years now. And I'm super, you know, intuitive and I feel energy. So when he gets even just like a modicum of a trigger, I'm like, oh, there was just an energy shift. And he is amazing now. He will take full responsibility. He'll be like, oh, you're right. Woo, whoa. Like something did get triggered. Let me do some work on that and I'll come back to you.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's like the dream. That's someone that is taking full responsibility. And then of course, there's going to be some self-evaluation on my end of, whoa, was I unfair just now? Just evaluating.
Yes.
Okay. Is there anything that I did here that warranted a trigger? I mean, honestly, most of the time it wasn't. Most of the time it's just me talking and there's something I said that just triggered something old in him.
Yeah. You never know.
Yeah. You know, whereas 7 years ago, there would be like a, you shouldn't have said that to me. And there's a whole thing, right? But now taking self-responsibility. And the interesting thing about self-responsibility, like a lot of times I'll find in couples that first start doing this work, there's a reaction in them of, I don't want to take self-responsibility because it's their fault. And there's this, but I shouldn't have to do work. They're the ones that fucked up kind of energy. What I always say to them is you taking responsibility is not you losing power. It's actually you gaining power because what you're doing in that moment is you're saying, whoa, I'm really triggered. I have a difficult feeling. I have a difficult emotion coming up, but I'm so powerful that I can go and use trigger free and I can completely remove this difficult emotion in me. I don't need my partner to do it for me. And the problem is if we don't have that tool, then we get like super angry, super groupy, because what we want is we want someone else to take away our bad feeling. And then we have to start controlling and manipulating other people's behavior in order to feel better.
Yes. It's so funny. Patrick says to me all the time, I will notice that he gets triggered by something and I'll say, oh, I just triggered you. What's going on? And he'll deny it. You know, he doesn't want to get into it at that moment. Maybe he wants to go do some self-reflecting, but we're not in a place or a time where he can do that. So he'll say, no, nothing. And I'll say, no, tell me. And he'll say, no. And he'll keep denying. And I kind of hold him accountable. And I'm like, this is something that you at least need to understand as a trigger. And he'll say, oh, you're so intuitive. I hate that you're so intuitive. And he'll like go off and take responsibility. I do think it's important to let someone know when you see that they're triggered and you let them continue to tell themselves that it's your fault. That's not beneficial for anyone. Does that make sense?
I mean, for me in my relationship, my partner taking responsibility for his triggers became actually a non-negotiable. It's part of life to get triggered by one another, but we can either choose to grow and evolve separately and together through these triggers, or we can stay in that stage one unconscious state where we're just like reactive and the relationship feels really toxic. And my non-negotiable is that you do take some self-responsibility and you do evaluate it. And again, what that would mean is just, hey, I'm feeling that you're triggered. You know, maybe sometimes like if he gets triggered, I get triggered in response. So then what we do is we like go do our own separate processing and work using trigger-free. And then we come back together once the trigger has cleared and we have like a very clear, loving dialogue about it. And that, yeah, that's like the stage two relationship. And it's interesting because if you do a lot of that work, you then can start to dip into stage three. And a stage three relationship is, I would say, a very deeply intuitive relationship where there's a really rich intimacy where it's kind of like I can be at one side of the house, my partner Tilo can be at another, and maybe all of a sudden I feel an emotion and he can feel me feeling it at the other side of the house. And he comes and like tends to me, comes like, hey, are you okay? Or vice versa. These relationships where you almost think it's impossible. What? How could that happen? Like, how could someone be at the other side of the house and feel you feeling something? But when you're that tapped in and respectful of one another, that sort of deep intimacy can start to flourish and evolve. The interesting thing is when we're in a stage one relationship, we always want our partner to like read our minds. It's like, you should be able to tell that I'm angry, or you should know that I want this.
I want you to want to do the dishes.
Yeah. Right. And I've always said that I think the reason that we say things like that is because somewhere deep inside us, we have a knowing that that's actually possible, that like a relationship like that is possible, where someone does feel me and someone is so intuitive and someone does know what I want before I even say it. But that never happens in a stage one relationship. It never happens first. And we want it to happen in stage one because we have, again, we have this deep intuition that it's possible, but it's not possible at the stage we're at. And so we have to go through the three stages to get there. And that means, you know, something that I used to do that I've done like for years and this relationship and past ones was I never made my partner guess. I was always like telling my partner exactly what I needed. And I would just assume that they couldn't read my mind. You know what I mean? And I always felt like, well, if I don't tell my partner what I need, then I can't be mad at them if they don't show up. Like that was always the stance that I was in. And that's really appropriate for stage one and two. You do need to over communicate. But the beautiful thing about doing that, about over communicating everything and doing your own personal work, is you start to know your partner so well that you develop an intuition for them. You develop an energetic connection to them that you can then eventually shift into like this stage three, where all of a sudden you don't need to say everything because your partner can feel it, your partner can see it, your partner can read your mind. But you don't, what the problem is we do when we're in like stage one or even stage two is we think we can just jump to stage three when that actually takes time.
And it takes time. I
So
think
much time.
sometimes people have this idea that, oh, well, maybe it's only been 6 months, but we've spent every day together.
But time, that kind of time doesn't make any difference. It's the time doing the work. It doesn't matter if you've been married for 50 years.
Yes.
Most couples will go their whole lives and still be in stage one. Our parents' level of people, they're all stage one. Most people don't go beyond stage one. Right. So it's time spent beyond stage one, where you've started taking responsibility for your own triggers. You start looking at your triggers as every trigger is an opportunity to heal an unhealed wound from the past. And every time I do it, I'm less likely to get triggered like that again. And so the more you do that, the more peaceful your relationship dynamic becomes, because you get less and less and less triggered. And that gets you closer and closer and closer to stage three. So going back to your original question of what is just them, what is okay with me?
What do I need to accept about them?
Yeah, what do I need to accept about them? I think it first comes down to knowing yourself really well and knowing what your non-negotiables are.
So this is me being completely honest, and I have thought of this a lot, and people might think I'm a little wacky for saying it or completely suppressed. I don't have a lot of non-negotiables. I guess realistic things that he would do, you know, obviously, if you hit me, no, things like that, but he's never exhibited those behaviors. So, realistic things that he would do, I probably only have like two or three. And so that makes me question sometimes when I get triggered. Do I really care about this trigger, or am I triggered because I am thinking if someone else saw this situation, they would think it was wrong?
I mean, I would say in order to find discernment there, you do need to do some inner work. And, again, that's where Trigger Free is a great tool to do that, to start to discern what is it that's triggering me here. And in Trigger Free, at the end of that process, you get action steps for how to respond if the situation were to occur again. And that's where you can really get the discernment of why you're triggered. Is it really something that you want changed, or is it something that you're worried about what other people will say, et cetera. I don't think that you can fully know that until you've done that inner work.
So some things I have done the inner work around. When I really look at what I care about, like what I am willing to leave this relationship over, there aren't a lot of things.
Well, I just want to clarify. It's not just about will I leave the relationship. Sometimes what can happen is, let's say that a partner just doesn't show up at the house. Maybe they are good at making the money and stuff, but then they're like not showing up. They're not really being super present in the house, or they're not helping around the house. Let's say if that's my partner, maybe I'm not willing to leave them over that. Okay. Maybe that's like, okay, well, that's not really a non-negotiable. I'm not going to say like, I'm going to leave the relationship if you don't help me pick up around the house, or if you don't help me with dinner, if you don't help me with the kids or whatever. But then there's also the evaluation of, am I totally full and fulfilled? Do I feel like my partner is totally showing up? Am I like overjoyed in this relationship? Do we have an amazing sex life? Is this the relationship I always dreamed of? Does this feel like that stage three relationship where my partner's really intuiting me and what I need? And like, I don't have to tell them what I need. And then there needs to be an evaluation of, do we want to show up for each other in that way? Do I want to show my partner devotion? Do I want to make my partner really happy? And does my partner want to do that for me? So it's not just like a, okay, it's either a non-negotiable or I'm just going to have to deal with my partner not showing up. And I'm not saying you in particular, I'm just saying this in general. It's also an evaluation of, well, what do I really want? Because the thing that I see so many people doing, men and women, is their partner's not showing up in a certain way. They feel like, well, I don't think my partner's going to show up. So then they just suppress their desire that they actually want their partner to show up in a certain way. Deep down, they actually want something, but they're like, well, I don't think I'm going to get it with my partner. So I have to figure out how to be okay with that. And then they start, air quotes, being okay with that. Because ultimately, if they were to be so honest with themselves, they'd be like, okay, no, if I were to actually write down what a literal perfect relationship is on a piece of paper, it would probably be different, but I don't want to say that to myself. I don't want to acknowledge that because it's not what I have. And I don't think it's something I can ever have. And yet I'm not willing to leave the relationship. So it's just easier for me to suppress my desire. And that's where I see all sorts of issues. The issues come out in other ways then. The issues come out in there's now kind of a lack of trust in the relationship. There's less respect between the two people. There's maybe less intimacy. There's less flirting, there's less connection, or there's more fighting, or the two people just grow apart. They start kind of living their own lives separately and they only really come together for the kids, or it starts coming out in other ways, like people getting sick. When we suppress our desires, it hurts us in some way. And we don't always know the way that it's hurting us, but it's not ultimately healthy for us to do that.
For the listener who is hearing this, thinking to themselves, okay, I hear all of that and I don't suppress it. I do bring it up to my partner over and over and over and over again, and nothing changes. Then what?
First of all, can you be creative in the way that you approach it? There's all sorts of interesting creative ways to evoke responses from your partner or acquire essentially what you want in a relationship. Getting a relationship coach is a good way to start to explore that. But beyond that, it's also like, are you doing work on the relationship together? Are you doing relationship counseling? Are you guys both doing your own inner work to evolve together? How you actually tried things. If you're saying, for instance, let's say somebody's like, we never have a date night. And I always want a date night. And I always ask them for a date night. And then we never get it planned. Well, where's the self-responsibility in terms of being like, grab the schedule, be like, hey, pick a day that we can have a date night. And then it's like, no matter what, we are just going to be together on that day. So I see a lot of people complaining about someone not showing up, but then not going that extra step of really figuring out the tangibles of it, of how can we actually make this happen? Like, if you want more of me, how can we schedule that in? Thinking about how can we literally take the step versus just bitching to one another about how the other person isn't showing up. For instance, with my original example of, okay, my partner's never showing up, on time to dinner. The conversation that could be had in that case is, hey, why aren't you showing up? What's happening? What's happening in your schedule? Can you change your schedule to show up on time? Right. So it's going the extra step further because a lot of times we give our power away when we just tell our partner we want them to show up, but then we're not actually, sometimes it's also we're not giving them extra specifics about how to show up. It's like, I want my partner to start doing inner work. And then you start getting frustrated that your partner's not doing inner work. But have you actually sat down and said, hey, I need you to go find a therapist?
Yes. Or like if you're at dinner and your partner does show up, they made it, but they're on their phone. You haven't specified, no, I need you to be present at dinner.
Right. And you can just do that in the moment. And there's always ways to phrase things. We can do it in a pissed off, accusatory way, or we can do it in a desirous way. Instead of like, I asked you to dinner and now you're on your fucking phone, we could say, hey, thank you so much for coming to dinner. I love having your energy here. Would you mind putting your phone away while we sit here so I can really enjoy you?
Let's be focused on each other.
Yeah, right. There's always a loving way to say things. And then there's a, it's like, who wants to hang out with you when you're yelling at them? If you're like, I asked you to come to dinner and now you're on your fucking phone. Well, do they want to put their phone away then if you're speaking to them like that? Probably not.
Or you're passive aggressive and you don't say anything about it. And then, just like we were saying earlier, you let it bottle up and explode.
Right. So let's say that this is the case of someone where they're like, okay, I've tried all those things. I've asked them to go to therapy with me. I have been as creative as I could. I've been as loving as I could. I've done all the things. And my partner's still not showing up, but I don't want to leave them. Then I would say, okay, that's a you issue. What's going on in you where you're self-abandoning, where you're sacrificing your own needs? Because you're afraid of being alone or you're afraid of leaving that relationship, there's a unhealthy attachment issue going on then.
Yes.
And that's where working with a really good coach or a therapist in terms of healing, why am I so terrified of being alone? Why don't I love myself enough to claim what I really need? Like, this person is repeatedly not showing up. I've done everything that I can. If somebody in that case were to tell me, well, but no matter what, I can't leave them, then I would definitely say, okay, then there's definitely something going on in you. I heard someone the other day say the number one sign of childhood trauma is as an adult trying to get a difficult person to love you.
Ooh.
Trying to get a difficult person to love you. And when I heard that, it like cut because I was like, oh my God, that was so me for the majority of my life. Literally up until like probably 5 years ago, that was me. because I didn't feel a total secure attachment in childhood and I didn't feel fully whole, I was continuously in these really toxic relationships with a difficult person, trying to convince them that I was lovable, trying to get them to show up the way that I wanted them to, trying to get them to see me. But also, I would say 95% of the time, suppressing my desires and convincing myself that I actually didn't have desires and that it was fine. Like, it's fine. Like, that was like my phrase. Like, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. Like, yeah, I would have wanted them to show up, but whatever, it's fine. And I really thought it was fine. If we would have had this conversation and you would have been asking me, well, are you unhappy? I would have been like, no, I mean, like, it's fine. And I would have 100% believed that. But I was fully in an illusion. It was not fine. And it was coming out in all sorts of other ways. I was drowning myself in my work because I wasn't happy in my relationship. A lot of mothers do this with their kids. Like, all of their attention goes on their kids because their relationship, they can't fix their relationship. So then they like focus on other areas they can fix. And we just, if we can't fix it and it feels too overwhelming, I mean, I have clients do this where they like drown themselves in their work or they really start to excel at work because all their energy is going into their work. And that's what I did. I was like, work is super fulfilling. My relationship isn't. So I'm going to put all my energy in my work. And then it just usually with people, it gets to a point where at some point you want to look at, why am I running to this other thing? Do I feel super lit up and alive and happy in my relationship? And then just being so real with yourself. I wish somebody would have come to me 10 years ago and been like, girl, if you could write on a piece of paper your dream relationship, what would you write down? Just do that as an exercise, because there would have been a lot of things I would have written down that my current partner then did not have, you know? And then it's like, okay, if life is full of possibilities, that means you can have this. You wouldn't desire it if it weren't meant for you. So then the question is just, how can you get there? Because what I tell my clients all the time is if you don't acknowledge that you have a desire for it, you will never get there.
Yes.
It will never happen. So, yes, it feels hard at first. It feels scary. It feels icky to acknowledge what you actually want. But if you skip that step, you'll never get it. So, yeah, at first it's scary to be like, okay, yeah, I want a lot of things that my relationship doesn't have. But listen, there's always ways to get those things.
Always.
We're going to continue this because I want to do a part two here where we can get into more of your questions. But I think something that I just want to close with is to say that the reason why I wanted to record this conversation is because relationship work as a whole has been the biggest area of my personal focus for the last like 5 years. It's been the main thing that I've studied and the main area of work that I've done is both on myself and moving into my own feminine, moving out of just my own masculine energy that I was using as a workaholic, moving into this flowy, feminine, yummy, sexual, lit up, alive, vibrant, radiant, angry, whatever it is, like just emotional creature. And at the same time, doing that with my partner as he moved more into his masculine and into his more kind of warrior king energy. And then us doing this dance together of like, how can we shift together out of stage one and move into stage three? And I just want to say that when we got together, we were fully stage one. Even though I had done, you know, as we've said in previous conversations, like even though I had done 20 years plus of therapy, like I still consider myself in a largely stage one place when him and I got together 7 years ago. And there were so many moments in our relationship that felt really bad and really toxic to me. And I really was what I felt like trying to get a difficult person to love me. And I felt kind of like I was in a double bind of like, I'm not getting what I want, but I don't really want to leave this relationship. There were moments where I did, and I did leave it for a short period of time. But a lot of it was like, I don't want to leave, but I'm not getting what I want, and I have no idea what to do. And so I'm either suppressing it or I'm feeling really fucking angry, and I just don't know what to do. And the reason why I wanted to record this conversation is to let people know that there is a path. Like, there is a path to a better way. And you can end up being in this like literal dream relationship. You know, I used to always hear people say, like, those romance movies are like bullshit because that's never how relationships really are. And that's how it feels when you're in stage one and sometimes even stage two. It's like relationships are hard, yes. But when you've done the work, which again, we've been together 7 years, and I would say pretty much all 7 years was working on this, you can get to that, like, wow, this relationship feels like a fucking dream. So I think that as long as both people are willing to put in the work, and willing to look at themselves and willing to do that work and to experiment and to have kind of an open heart, there's always a way. And that's really what I want people to take away from this conversation. And even though you don't know the way yet, doesn't mean there isn't one.
That's gorgeous. And it's gorgeous. It makes me smile. It being cynical about it. Listen, I'm a cynic sometimes. I have been my whole life. But being cynical about it is not going to get you closer
Yeah.
to that dream relationship or that movie romance.
Exactly. Okay, so everybody listening, there's a yummy part two coming up. So
Ooh.
be sure to tune into that episode too.
It's gonna get juicy.
That's right.